Hola, mis amigos y mis amigas. Bienvenidos a mi podcast. Hello, my friends, and welcome to another episode of the Robcast. This is episode 150. Come on now. And this one, continuing the series on alternative wisdom, which I kind of made up, to be honest. The idea is obviously deep in the tradition, but I just decided to call it alternative wisdom. And last week I talked about punk wisdom. And in this episode, the last episode, introduced you to the idea of punk wisdom, pre-conventional, conventional, and post-conventional wisdom. And in this episode, I want to talk about the infinite, the unfair, your deadness, and maybe God is actually punking all of us. A couple things we're going to cover. Oh, yeah. New book comes out May 16th. It's called What is the Bible? How an Ancient Library of Poems, Letters, and Stories Can Transform the Way You Think and Feel About Everything. You can get bonus content at my site. You can pre-order it now. The audiobook is done and in the can in case you'd like to listen. That'll be out as well in May. And then... I'll do a short bookstore tour in May and would love to come see you. Or maybe would love for you to come see me, or I'll come see you, or something along those lines. All that info is at robbell.com. LA, New York, Chicago, Seattle, Portland, Denver, Minneapolis, and of course, Ohio. So there's a few things going on. Oh, and then in August, if you want to hang out with me in the woods, south of San Francisco, south of Santa Cruz, some wonderful people at 1440.org, 1440.org, have built a teaching, an immersive teaching center in the woods, in the Redwood Forest, and I'm going to do a weekend of teaching there, and you can come, and I'm going to talk about the atomic self and the science of the soul and all sorts of things, and we'll interact, and we'll ride the wave together, you know what I'm saying? So all that is at 1440.org, 1440.org, Rob Bell, your atomic self. I've already talked to some of you who are going to be there, so, you know, there we go. But now, let's talk about alternative wisdom. This is part four of this series, and, you know, honestly, let's be honest, this podcast, in many ways, it's just a sermon disguised as a podcast. You realize that, right? This all basically, to me, just one giant sermon. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you through a story that Jesus told. And once again, you know, I always give this disclaimer. If you don't come from a religious background or the Bible, all that stuff, you just kind of want to go, woo. Hang with me here because this is about what it means to be human. And Jesus tells this story. And if you have had some familiarity with the Jesus stories, you may have heard this one. And of course, I love when we take something that people are familiar with and we just dance with it, and all of a sudden we discover all these things that we missed that were right there the whole time. But the story is found that he tells in, it's actually a parable in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 20. And I want to take you through the story, and then we'll begin to sort of go layer, and then we'll go a little bit layer deeper, and then we'll go another layer deeper. And then obviously I'll offer you some things to think about, but then, as it always is, I'm sure you'll take it and take it way, way farther. And at the end, I want to give you a mantra that's really helped me, a phrase that I often think about that really, oh man. And this that we're going to be looking at has so changed how I see things. And so the story's in Matthew chapter 20. Jesus says, tells this story. He says, for the kingdom of heaven, you'll also say, the phrase he's using there, you could say the kingdom of God, or you could say the realm of the divine, the mode of love. There's all sorts of phrases we might use for that. But for the kingdom of heaven, Jesus says, is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About 9 in the morning, landowner goes out and he saw other people standing in the marketplace doing nothing. That's key, by the way, to the story. They're doing nothing. He said to them, you also go and work in my vineyard, and I'll pay you whatever is right. So they went. Then the landowner, the guy who owns the vineyard, he goes out at noon, and then at 3, and does the same thing. Then he goes out at 5 and he finds people who are still standing around, which is absurd, right? Because by 5, you're not going to get hired if you haven't been hired by 5. It's like the end of the day. He said to them, why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing? Which is ridiculous, right? Because the owner would know why they're standing around. They're standing around because they haven't been hired. So there's like a little bit of a duh. Like, why would a landowner be asking that question? So once again, the story is already like bending a little bit. It's already like playing its hand. It's like subverting itself. Their answer is because no one has hired us. Duh, they answered. I added the duh. He said to them, you also go and work at my vineyard. When evening came, the owner of this vineyard says to his supervisor, call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first. Why does the landowner want the people who were hired last paid first? This is a weird story. The workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon came and each received a denarius, which was the agreement the workers made who were hired first. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more because they're standing in line, right? They're standing in line thinking, wait, we agreed to work all day for a denarius. These dudes who showed up at the last minute get a denarius. So obviously they're doing the math thinking, so apparently the owner's going to pay us way, way more. When each of them also received a denarius, which in the first century was an honest day's wage, so this was totally fair, they began to grumble against the landowner. They basically said, these men who were hired last worked only 1 hour, and you've made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day. And then the landowner says, I'm not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous? Oh, come on. Now, if you're like me, you know there's something going on there. But it's like, you want to get your hands on it. Do you know what I mean? By the way, what a great line. Are you envious because I'm generous? Okay, so a couple observations. First, it's absurd, right? Story's absurd. It's totally absurd. It's weird. It's strange. That should tell you something. And here's the thing. If you have a strange reaction to the story, that's how it works. It's like it pokes you. It needles you. It like gets under your skin. That's central to understanding the story. It's a very absurd story. See, conventional wisdom of the group think. Conventional wisdom can be incredibly healthy. We wear seatbelts because we have data that if you wear a seatbelt in a car accident, you're a lot less likely to be injured. So conventional wisdom can be incredibly healthy and absolutely necessary, this agreed upon wisdom about certain things. But conventional wisdom can also have a lot at stake in keeping things exactly as they are. It's the groupthink, it's the party line, it's, well, we've never done that before. It's when tradition turns in on itself and moves from health to unhealth. Now, why is that interesting? Because conventional wisdom generally comes at us quite literally. It comes fairly directly. A plus B equals C. Do step 1, step 2, and then step 3. Here are the 7 techniques. Here are the 4 methods. Conventional wisdom generally communicates to us in a fairly straightforward, literal, non-metaphorical way. So when you are calling people to challenge conventional wisdom, because conventional wisdom isn't big enough, wide enough, expansive enough, innovative enough to handle what the situation demands, you're probably going to have to come in some other way than just right down the middle. I often talk about how post-conventional wisdom often comes in through the side door. It's less soundbite and less either or and less do you or don't you. And oftentimes it comes in through the riddle. It comes in through the story, through the song, through the poem. It comes in sideways. It comes in through the side door. So Jesus here is telling a story that's inviting us to some post-conventional wisdom. It's some alternative wisdom. He's inviting us to some punk wisdom, essentially. But if he just comes straight at it, it might not be as effective as telling a very absurd story where you're like, wait, everybody worked a different amount of time, but they all got paid the same. So the story is absurd, and that should tell you something. It's intentionally absurd. Now stay with me. It's also unfair. The disorientation of the story, or the disruption, or the thing that provokes you or repulses us about the story, the thing about the story that doesn't feel right, is the unfairness. They all work the same. They all work differently, but they get paid the same. See, the owner is playing a different game. The owner of the vineyard is not playing by the conventional rules of fairness. So our growth generally happens through disruptions. We hear a story, we see something that doesn't work like everything else works. And it like pokes us, it prods us, it shakes us, it grabs us by the shoulders and rattles us. Institutions, organizations, faith communities, businesses, marketplaces, industries, family systems, neighborhoods generally have a center of gravity of consciousness. You know what I'm talking about, right? There's generally a way we've all agreed things are done. What's proper, what's fair, what's appropriate. And what this story is doing is it comes in to this world where everybody gets paid differently depending on how many hours they worked. And Jesus tells a story that deeply offends and confronts that. But here's the thing. The unfairness of the story is rooted not in scarcity or lack, but in generosity. See, the unfairness isn't rooted in injustice. It isn't rooted in oppression or a degradation of civil rights or human dignity. The unfairness isn't rooted in any of those things. The unfairness is rooted in generosity. The owner decides to be generous with everybody. And that's like the hinge that the story turns on. Now, it's ridiculous, but if you read the first couple lines, and here's where things get really interesting, it begins with, "For the kingdom of heaven is like." So Jesus isn't talking about economics as we think about economics. He isn't talking about time cards or the sheet that records how many hours you work. He isn't talking about taxes. He isn't talking about this realm of paying bills that you and I know and going to work and making sure you have enough for rent and mortgage and put gas in the tank. He essentially says, if you want to understand love, if you want to understand the realm of spirit, if you want to understand how the divine is, it's like a landowner who pays everybody the same. So when we talk about unfairness, we're not talking about actual real-world injustice. We're not talking about lawsuits. We're not talking about, we're talking about, you might say, the space in your heart. We might talk about you participating in a larger flow of the universe. Now, two details. One, when you find something odd, strange, weird, like this story, one of the most interesting questions you can ask is, what is it in the larger flow of? What's before it? What's after it? Is the point not just in the parable, but is the point maybe in what's before and what's after the parable? So, what is the story before the story where Jesus tells this parable, this vineyard story? It's about a man who's rich and he comes to Jesus. And after a conversation with Jesus, Jesus says, hey, you should probably sell your possessions and give to the poor. He says to this man, because he realizes this man is so deeply attached. His worth, value, and his whole sense of what it means to be human is so tied up in all of his accumulated possessions that Jesus goes right for it and says, you want to be free? Sell your stuff and give it to the poor. And the man walks away because he can't do it. Then you have the story of the vineyard. You with me now? You starting to see how this is going? Then after the story of the vineyard, Jesus predicts his death. He says, I'm going to go to Jerusalem. The Son of Man, that was his preferred term for himself, will be delivered over. He's going to be crucified. He predicts he's going to die. We're going to connect all this in a minute. And then what's the story after that? He has these students who he is teaching about the way of love, the kingdom of heaven, the path of nonviolence. He's teaching these students, and one of them, their mom comes to Jesus and says, when you come into your kingdom, I want to make sure my sons have cabinet positions. You didn't see that coming, did you? She essentially says the first century equivalent of when you come into your power, because, and right there we've revealed what? She assumes that Jesus is playing the same game as everybody else. She assumes he's grasping for political, military, economic power, just like everybody else. So when you become powerful, like the game is played, can you make sure that my sons sit at your left and right hand? And Jesus says, you don't know what you are asking. Can you drink the cup I'm going to drink? Because what Jesus is going to do is he is going to stand in solidarity with the poor and oppressed. And he is going to challenge the industrial, religious, military, economic complex of his day that oppressed the poor in order to keep the elites wealthy and in control. And we all know that systems bend towards self-preservation, and they're going to crucify him as an enemy of the state because he challenged this oppressive, deeply unfair system. So when he says to them, like, can you drink the cup I'm going to drink? He's essentially saying, are you willing to endure the cost of standing up for the poor and oppressed? And they're like, yeah, we can, not having any clue what he's talking about. So why is this interesting? Because in the first century, you had a dominant energy of the culture, which was grasping, clinging, winning, dominating, accumulating, proving, impressing, controlling, ruling. Sound familiar? Yeah, yeah. You know exactly what I'm talking about. And so this story is in among a story about a mother saying, hey, I want to make sure that my sons are powerful and well-known and have influence, and a man with influence and wealth and resources whose identity is so wrapped up in his winning that he's actually bound and kind of miserable. He's not free. And Jesus invites him to be free from all that, but he can't do it. And so in the middle of these incidents, you have Jesus telling a story. And it's a story about people who get picked up at five because no one wants them. No one has hired them. And they get the same as everybody else. It's a story about their deadness. Now, that grasping, clinging, winning, dominating, accumulating, proving, impressing, trying to keep the voice in your head that tells you you're not worthy, trying to keep it quiet by doing things in order to make sure that you keep telling yourself, I'm worthy, I'm good enough. That controlling, that energy, it's so exhausting. It's so heavy. And it's so obsessed with fairness. See, when you're trapped in that order of things, if somebody else has some good come their way, obviously then, if they have a bigger slice of the pie, it must have been taken from my slice of the pie. Grasping, clinging, winning, dominating, accumulating, proving, impressing, controlling energy is generally rooted in scarcity. There's only a little bit, and if I don't throw some elbows and throw some punches and outdo everybody, I'm not going to get my piece. But what Jesus does is he tells a story in which the landowner gives everybody the same. And why is that? because you can't divide the infinite. You cannot divide up that which has no boundaries or edges. It's infinite, ineffable, and unlimited. So here's the thing. What you want most in life, there is no shortage of. Joy? What are you gonna divide joy? Peace? Are you gonna like hand out parts of peace until there's no parts left? Satisfaction, connection, solidarity, transcendence. What you and I actually want, what actually gives life the vitality, what actually makes your blood course through your veins with joy and euphoria, what actually makes the whole thing matter, there is no shortage of that, and it can't be divided. And you and I, just like 2,000 years ago, live in a world of grasping, clinging, winning, dominating, in which scarcity is generally the dominant mindset. Somebody else gets something great that comes their way. Do you immediately celebrate that goodness, or do you immediately take stock of what you have and compare? How much of the modern mind, how much of the energy is burned up comparing? One word, Instagram. How many of you Instagram, let alone Snapchat, let alone Facebook, is actually a giant exercise in comparing, and it's exhausting? How many of you don't do those, or you've logged out, or you only check them once in a great while because you realized what it did to you? Because scarcity and comparing are like the dominant economies of the modern world. And Jesus tells a story about how you can't divide the infinite. Do you see what a weird, strange, fantastic story is? Now, we're going to get to how all of this sort of how we would begin to apply or live all this out in very practical ways. But, oh, this is so, so much here. And then, besides dividing the infinite, we want things to be fair until we don't. Are you with me on this? I want it to be fair, and I want everybody to get what they deserve until I make a mess of things, and then I want grace and a pass. How many of you have ever said, can I just get a break here? Can I just get a break? Can you just not write me that ticket? Can I get a free pass here? Can I just get some grace? We want it fair until we're the one who's made a mess of things, and then we don't want it fair. We want fairness until we've made a mess of things, and then we want unfairness to come our way because we want a break, because we don't want the consequences. We want others to suffer the consequences of what they've done until we've done similar things, and then we want things deeply unfair. So we generally want it both ways. We want it fair for them, but we want it unfair for us. And what Jesus does is tells a story, and he says, you want to understand how love works? It was never fair in the first place. The whole thing was a big, generous gift in which everybody gets the same. Everybody gets the same. Can you accept that? The thing that you've been working so hard for, you've had the whole time. Raise your glasses, my friends. So good. Do you realize what's going on here? You're getting punked. God is in on the joke. And let me say it again. God is in on the joke. And Jesus, in this parable, is teaching us how to be in on the joke. There is a lightness to this. There is a play. There is a ridiculous absurdity to it. A dude gives everybody the same amount, including people who showed up at the last minute. It is your deadness, your loserness, your nobody wanted to hire you-ness that is what rescues you, not how fantastic and wonderful and moral and enlightened and progressive you are. Are you with me on this? This landowner, everybody gets paid. And see, here's why it's alternative wisdom. Because you and I live in a world that is obsessed with grasping, clinging, winning, dominating, accumulating, proving, impressing, and I would add ranking. And so what we do even inside of ourselves, stay with me on this, is we know the thoughts we have. We know what we do when no one's looking. We know what we've been involved with in our past. And so we have this running commentary about how worthy or unworthy, how lovable or unlovable, how good or bad, righteous or evil, whatever language you want to use, how much we measure up or how much we don't. And so we're doing well, or we made a good decision, or something good came our way. And so we're like, hey, but then it's an addiction. We stumble, we fall, we say something, we blow up another relationship. We are reminded of something from the past. We prefer to just sort of push under the rug, and suddenly the scorecard, we get points taken away. And Jesus essentially says, God isn't playing that game. The whole thing was a gift, an undeserved, unmerited gift the whole time. And every single one of you who it's 5 o'clock and no one has hired you, and you're humiliated as the sun goes down because it's a day of failure, you're in too. And it's in your 5 o'clockness. It's in your siblings always got better grades than you. It's in your coworkers who just seem to skate by without having to work as hard. It's in all of the ways in which you don't measure up, you aren't worthy enough, you aren't the best, you're the B team, you're the JV. It's in exactly that moment that the divine meets you and is like, ah, that's good. You're fine. You're fine. You're fine. Yeah, I would argue that the parables, there's a joke in the parables. And I don't mean this as a non-serious. I mean this as a joke on the other side of serious. You go all the way through this because life is serious. Pain and suffering and loss and love and grace and peace are all serious. But if you push through these things, what you actually discover in the Gospels is there is this ridiculous punk playfulness. Jesus tells an absurd story that should have you going, what kind of landowner is this? Exactly. Because this landowner isn't playing the game like everybody else. Because in the kingdom of God, in the realm of love, everything works differently, and all the losers belong, and all the people who aren't good enough, their sons and daughters, and all the people who have made a mess of their life and haven't measured up and haven't reached the full potential come to the feast and party with everybody else. Yes. Yeah. If you find yourself thinking, well, that's just a completely upside down. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So first off, what do? You celebrate unfairness. You celebrate unfairness. Yeah. I am talking into a microphone to you about things that I love. I get to do this for my work. How absurd and unfair is that? You celebrate the unfairness. And by the way, in my observation, the people who actually have the courage and the fortitude to stand up for the poor and oppressed, who actually have the temerity to go after the cruel oppressor, the people in our world who actually do stand up for everybody who's been stepped on, they're the people who get this. They're the people who get, they get that the whole thing, they get that they are the recipient of a love and a grace that is just available to all. And it's in response to this that they then go do their stuff. You tap into this, my friends, and you will find energy, and you will find vitality, and you will find courage and spine to go out there and actually stand up for the other kind of unfairness. Does that make sense? You celebrate the unfairness. You look around at your friends and you go, how ridiculous is this that we get to talk about these things and do these things? And have this breath and this life that we've been given. So what you notice is people who tap into gospel wisdom, they hold things looser. They throw themselves into it with more passion and vitality and life. They're laughing more, but they're also at the same time holding the whole thing looser because they're in, it's like they're in on the joke. They're in on the joke. Sometimes people say to me like, how do you picture God? And I'm always like, laughing? It's not a visual, it's a sound. It's either the sound of music, like inviting you to dance, or it's laughing. Yeah, Yeah, laughing because it's your death that saves you. It's your weakness, because weak is the new strong. See, in the realm of love and the divine, all the things that you thought were earning you something are actually working against you, because that's not how it works. You're already in. Can you accept that? The only problem is when we can't accept that we're accepted. You're fine, exactly as you are. That's how it works. Can you accept that? If you can't, then you're going to be miserable. Yeah. Yeah, it's your death that saves you. It's the 5 o'clock losers, to which I can totally relate. It's the 5 o'clock losers. Yeah, that's how it works. That's how it works. So here's a mantra that has helped me a ton. And try this one out. Try this. I'm not playing that game. When you find those old grasping, clinging, winning, dominating, proving, accumulating, comparing, impressing, ruling, controlling impulses. Oh, wait, I'm not playing that game. When you're at a party and people are like, what do you do? What do you do? And there's something within you that wants to like start listing all your accomplishments to make sure everybody knows, you know, that you're legit. And you're like, wait, I'm not playing that game. I'm not playing that game. When something good happens to somebody near you, and something within you wants to be like, wait, what? They got a new car? Wait, they got a great vacation? Wait, they got a promotion? Wait, she did what? And everything within you wants to read their bounty and blessing and abundance as a like a referendum on your scarcity and lack. You stop and you go, wait, I'm not playing that game. Here's the thing. You start celebrating all the good that has come other people's way, nothing will light up your life faster. Why? Because you're not playing that game. Because the divine is not playing that game. You cannot divide the infinite. So for the things that happen around you, you celebrate unfairness because of all the unfairness that has come your way. And you do that. You do that. You come to see this gift that we all possess already. Now you actually can go stand up for some real unfairness. Now you can make a difference in the world because you're coming from a completely different place. You're not playing the game everybody else is playing. That, my friends, that's some punk wisdom. The rich young ruler who comes, the rich young man, who is basically owned by the stuff that he thinks he owns. And Jesus says, well, sell your stuff and give to the poor. Essentially, you want to be free? You want to really live? Stop clinging to all this stuff. He can't do it. The mom of Jesus' students, who's like, hey, this one thing, just I want to make sure that my sons are going to have, you know, a lot of power when, because obviously you must be playing the game as it's played. So, because remember a kingdom in the first century, a kingdom, there was Herod's kingdom. He was like the king of the Jewish people. You had Caesars had kingdoms. There were the Parthians, there were the Greeks. Kingdom was like a political, economic, military, cultural term. People knew what a kingdom was. So Jesus takes this loaded political term, kingdom, and he says, oh, there's another kingdom. It's right here. It's among you. It's within you. It's upon you. It's at hand. It's the kingdom of the divine. There's a whole nother realm right here present within this one. And you can live in its flow. You can submit to it. You can receive it. You can be in it. And it operates totally differently than the other kingdoms. So one of the things practically you can do when you find yourself in situations where you think, wait, something's up here, is just name what the kingdom is. The kingdom of accumulation, the kingdom of indifference, the kingdom of impressing, the kingdom of our way at all costs, the kingdom of repression. Whatever you do, don't talk about what was really happening. Just keep pretending like everything's fine. You know what I'm right? The kingdom of preservation, which is just keep this thing afloat, prop it up no matter what. Yeah, we're surrounded by kingdoms. And essentially the power of this story, the power of punk wisdom, of alternative wisdom, is you come to see there's another kingdom that subverts all these kingdoms right here, right now. There's another mode you can live in, and it begins by you celebrate the unfairness that you haven't gotten what you deserve. You've gotten so much more. And the thing that everybody's striving for, everybody's had the whole time. Yeah, he's punking you. God is in on the joke. It's like God is winking, going, look at everybody stressed out. Look at people in traffic sweating up a storm. Look at all the people pushing and shoving and taking selfies to show you how good they look. Look at everybody desperately trying to prove that they're worthy and they've earned it. When it's almost like the divine says, they've been my kids the whole time. Stop striving, grasping, clinging, and just enjoy that you've been in and you've belonged the whole time. Yeah, you see, my friends? I know. Something to think about. Something to swim in. A new mode. Let me warn you. You start seeing this. You start seeing this scarcity and lack paranoia, and you start seeing it over and against generosity, you guaranteed, you start living in this mode, you will start giving people things. You will find resources of generosity you never thought possible within yourself when you start playing a different game. When you move from the paranoia about scarcity and lack to, oh, it's my deadness, it's my loserness, it's my weakness, this is where the strength is. I'm the worker at 5 p.m. who's got nothing but the weird, lavish grace of the landowner. Oh, I'm telling you, you will find resources and energy you never thought possible, and you will find yourself laughing. By the way, those of you who like mentioned that I laugh a lot, yeah, it's because I'm in on the joke.